Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I am super excited to have a wonderful guest here, Mr. Daryl Vidal, and I'm kind of speechless. I don't usually get speechless with guests, but so for those that may not know, Daryl Vidal was on the original Karate Kid movie. In my eyes, and I'm sure in a lot of people's eyes, he's the one that should have won the All Valley tournament. He was the real star of the movie, but we'll certainly get into that as we go along. But I'm really excited. One, because having a movie star on is always nice. But I'm also really excited because when I saw the original Karate Kid, I saw this guy doing all these great kicks, and I'm thinking, oh, well, this guy's like a Taekwondo guy, and come to find out that he is a Kenpo stylist. I was like, right on. So very excited to hear that, and I was also excited to learn that he is in my old stomping ground. So I'm from San Diego, and he's out that way. So I was like, "This is kismet. This is meant to be." So yeah, I'm super excited to have you on and to hear your story. And we're gonna talk about your journey. We're going to talk some Karate Kid, and we're also going to talk about your book that will be out. So when this episode goes out, your book should be out. So I'm excited that.
So I can talk as if it's out.
It's coming out on December the 10th. Is that correct? So yeah, yep. this episode will yep. If it doesn't come out that day, it will be out by then. So. I want to hear the story of how Kenpo found you, how the martial arts found you, where did it all start for you? And
I don't know that. Well, Kenpo found me because when I started taking karate, and like a lot of people who started when we were young, watching Enter the Dragon and some of those old kung fu movies. I'm a little bit older than you, so this is late 60s, early 70s, growing up in, like you say, San Diego, where I was born. My older brother took a karate class from a gentleman who was teaching out of the garage, and I believe it was also a Kenpo stylist, but I don't know that for sure. And he studied with him for, less than a year, and taught us, what he was getting from his instructor. And that was just basics, stances, punches, blocks, kicks. But even at that time, I was probably 10 or 12 at the time, I could see that I had an affinity for the martial arts. I could feel, I feel like I could do the kicks, do the punches. It was definitely something that caught my interest. So we had moved to a town called Chino, which is about an hour out of LA area. And my instructor, who's still my instructor, Joe Rosas, was teaching through the Chino Parks and Rec. And it was Kenpo. And it was not Ed Parker Kenpo, although we would compete in, and go to tournaments and knew those guys. Ours, we always called it Chinese Kenpo. His instructor, they shared some of the same lineage. Chow and coming down on this side, and then a Parker on this side. My instructor, his name was Dan Guzman, studied both with Parker, as well as Bill Rosaki, and I can't really get too deep into all his lineage, because I really don't know, but he trained with a bunch of guys in what they call Chinese Kempo, and guys like David Torres and Rudy Castro and George Franco, they were all in that Chinese Kempo world with my instructor, Joe Rosas. So that was back in the late 70s. Went up through the ranks, started doing a lot of competition. And so I know it must be in your mind that a lot of the kicks that I was doing in the movie are not Kempo kicks, and that's true. Kempo, you know, is pretty much a on-the-ground type of system. We don't really kick high that much. We have the, you know, the standard stuff, but really not jumping and spinning and, you know, falling on the ground doing kicks. But that was all flashy stuff that I kind of liked when I was going up. And so as I would compete in kata competition, I would add these flying, you know, the flashier kicks to my kata. Next thing you know, I had this kata that was not a school kata. It was just pretty much a made-up kata, a conglomeration of all these flashy moves and flashy kicks. And so I would compete with that, and I would compete pretty successfully, because back in the 70s, people would pretty much just compete with a school kata, you know. And so I'd be, you know, 4 or 5 people, 10 people, whatever, doing more or less the same kata, and then I would come in with this crazy kata and do a bunch of, you know, spinning kicks over the judges' heads and scream in their face, and, you know, kind of the early days of showmanship kata before they had showmanship katas, you know. And so that was for several years in the late 70s that I competed with that. Got my black belt in 81. So I was doing a competition in L.A. in Southgate, where you probably know. The guy comes up to me and says, "Hey, how would you like to be in a movie?" And it happened to be director's assistant. And the director is John Alvinson, who is also the director of Rocky. And he introduced himself, and they said, "Hey, we saw your kata, you know, saw you compete, and, you know, we'd like to have you come and do this project that we're working on." So they gave me a number to call, and, you know, I was totally blown away. I'm not an actor. I didn't know anything about Hollywood. You know, I knew I wanted to become famous as a karate person, but I had no idea really how to go about doing that. But I did think that, you know, if I do this kata in enough places, people might see me, it might happen. So boom, it happened. So, you know, within a week, I'm driving down to, you know, Burbank and getting into the studio and going to a sound stage, meeting all these people who are, you know, actors, and got to meet, you know, people who were already famous back then, you know, Pat E. Johnson, Fumio Demura, Gerald Okamura, you know, and just crazy stuff. You know, that's where we started training with all the guys who were the Cobra Kai's, you know, John or Billy and Ron and all those guys. At the time, I didn't know who they were. They were just people that were pretending that they knew karate. And then, obviously, I met Ralph and Pat Morita, obviously. He was already, you know, what Arnold from Happy Days at the time. So I was like, oh, wow, here's this guy. So that was really my first, you know, being starstruck with somebody, because all these other people, I didn't know who they were. And then, of course, Pat Johnson, he was in Enter the Dragon, and Fumio Demura. These guys were already, you know, famous legends already at the time. So that was also a very cool part of the whole thing. So that's how it all kind of came about, you know.
Very cool, very cool. So to kind of get back to the competing side, when you got into that, was it just forms, or were you doing fighting, weapons, any other divisions?
Typically we would do forms and fighting, you know, kata and kumite. So I would do both. Sometimes I'd win both, you know. The fighting comp- opponent. There's a lot more, out of your control stuff. So, you know, you might get a bad ref or there's a bad call. But I was pretty good at sparring. I really liked sparring more than kata. But, we would do both. During that time, I had collected, umpteen trophies. I think when I moved to from that house to this house, we're here in Murrieta where I live now. I think I didn't want to drag all those trophies around, so I think I threw away over 100 trophies, and just kept like the really special ones for me. You know, the first one and this big one and this one from internationals or whatever, and then kind of just. Got a little picky about those trophies, and then that's when I started, after my black belt, started to go think about school and college and all these things, and started not competing as much. And,
before the Karate Kid thing came along, did you have any? Aspirations of making martial arts your career? Or?
Well, that's an interesting question because I always thought I would be a martial artist, and once I started training, I always knew that it would probably always be part of my life. But in the model of my instructor and many people who I knew, he always had a full-time job, and then karate was, something that he did through the Parks and Rec at night. And I kind of modeled my life after that because I liked the idea of working through the Parks and Rec department and, being involved with the community. I never thought it would be something that I would get rich doing, which, a lot of people do. There's a lot of people that do have a school or many schools and do very well, but I always saw myself as it being my sideline, and I would work full time, work a regular job, which I still do, and then teach on the side. So that's kind of the way that I modeled my whole life, because I didn't see that that karate or martial arts would be my whole life. I always see that, it's something kind of a hobby, something that I do, something that I love, certainly part of my life, but not my whole life. So there's always been other things, I like to play golf, I like to snowboard, I like to fish, there's so many things in life, you can't just be doing one thing all the time, so I think you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that.
Martial arts or, either other sports and hobbies.
Yeah, no, I have a hard time deciding on just which martial art I want to do. I mean, I love Kenpo, and as we talked before we started recording, I've also done capoeira and taekwondo and hapkido. Took a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class last night. There's I'm looking into getting into some FMA.
I teach that too. Things I have a program for Filipino stick fighting, I call it, it's not really tied to any one lineage, because I trained with so many different people, but I did want to teach it. So after I had been collected all my drills and stuff that I would put together, I created the curriculum that I use now for Murrieta Stick Fighting Club, so I teach karate 2 nights a week, and then every other week I have my stick fighting club, that's very nice. My core martial arts.
So we got the Kenpo, we got the FMA. Any other systems that you've trained in?
Early on when I was younger, I wrestled in high school. Which, gave me a little bit of that grappling background, that you always use those skills. You never lose them. And then as a brown belt in my teens. I also boxed for a couple of years. And a lot of this I modeled after Bruce Lee, you know, like, oh, Bruce Lee, he does this, he does that, he learned to body box, you know, Wing Chun. So I sought out a Wing Chun guy and, you know, kind of got some fundamentals of Wing Chun, which love to, you know, I love and always do those drills. And if I run into somebody, do a little Chisao. I have a traditional wooden Mook Jong wooden dummy in my little chair here.
Oh, very nice.
So, yeah.
Very nice, very nice. As far as like the teaching side of that, were you already teaching kind of before the Karate Kid stuff came along? Were you already into the teaching side of it, or
yeah? You know, when you get to be like a brown belt and you get your black belt, most time you help out with, you know, in class, and that's what I was doing. So I become like my instructor's senior student once I got my black belt, and always teaching and training, you know. I always say that when you teach, you learn, and so yeah, it's something that I've always loved to do. When I moved here to Murrieta, where I live now, 35 years ago, it was just a new city. It just, you know, it's a new community, or was. And my wife and I, my wife teaches dance, and so we both approached the new city here and said, "Hey, you know, the Parks and Recreation program was just starting out, and we both started teaching our classes, you know, karate and dance, and those programs flourished and." Still teaching, and she is still teaching to this day. So yeah, it's really worked out for us.
Very nice, very nice. So with the, so you know, you get cast in the Karate Kid. Well, actually, let me kind of go back a little bit. So, you know, they reached out to you, but you didn't have to still like audition or anything. Like, was it
no? I
kind
sure
of automatically.
Basically, where they saw me and scouted me at that tournament, that was my audition. They said, "We want this guy." They gave me the phone number. I called it. Come in and start training with Pat Johnson and the Cobra guys. So yeah, it was instantaneous, and it was really cool because, you know, again, I was not an actor. I didn't know anything about it. All of a sudden, I'm in a sound stage, you know, actors and all these cast and crew walking around everywhere, you know, cameras, lights, all that. Mm-hmm. So and really an amazing.
Was your part kind of already set, or were they just like, oh, well, like we need some background guys? And...
Yeah, it was kind of like that because they brought me in to bring some realism. That was kind of his thought process. So that they gave me a character, you know, who would be kind of like he was in the montage, right? There's a lot of these cuts where you see me fighting other people, but I have a different logo, different gi. So I was, you know, a competitor. So they intentionally brought me in to be, you know, kind of the guy who really does karate. And I didn't expect it to stick out so much, but, you know, everybody that I talk to even to this day is, oh yeah, you're the guy, you could tell. And you know, but you know, to their credit, you know, they could see that it would make it, you know, bring another nuance to the whole thing with this guy doing this different type of moves. And it kind of branched into when they approached me, like, I've been working with them for a week or so. They came and said, "Hey, you know, we have this other role. We have this other part of the movie where we're the old man, Pat Morita, you know, Mr. Miyagi, is doing the crane technique." And I was like, "What's the crane technique?" And they say, "Well, we want you to do the crane technique because, you know, I don't think anybody else can do it. So you're going to stand up on this this telephone pole or a stump, right, sticking out of the ground, and you're gonna have one leg up, and put your arms out to the side like a bird, like a crane, and then do this jump kick. And the way they explained it to me was the kid would get injured, right? His leg would get hurt, and so he could only stand on one leg. So, stand on one leg, do the crane technique, jump and kick, and then land on that same leg. And so I said, okay, let me go practice that, and I'll tell you what I come back with. And I was actually in the soundstage, kind of like doing all these different, and it really wouldn't work, right? Because if you're gonna jump and kick and then land, you have to kind of be in the air for a while. So I finally went back to them, and I actually was talking to Ron Thomas about this. He was the guy that played Bobby Brown, and he was also a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He hadn't told anybody, so they didn't know, but you can tell also that he's trained. So we were working, and it's like, I don't think it's going to work. So I'm going to tell him that I'm going to try to do this. So so the what I went back with was basically a double jump kick, right? One leg up, or if you were to do a fake kick, jump, do the kick, land on the other leg. And then, so if you watch it, you'll see it. I jump, kick, land on the other leg, and then switch real fast back into the right leg base. And then that became the crane kick. And after I did that with the arms out, they said, okay, well, you got to do something else with your hands. You can't just stand like that all the time. So I said, okay, let's do this. I take this Wing Chun stance like this, and then go down and come up and bam, do the crane kick. And I had no idea. I thought it was foolish, and but I said, why would you ever do that? I said it one time, and they were like, because it's the crane kick. I said, okay, you're the boss. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And so, we did that, and they actually had me practicing it on. And so what I did is I said, give me a, I didn't know that it would be a stump, 4 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, you want to do this on top of this. It's going to be a telephone pole. I said, okay, well, get me a paper plate. So somebody went to the cafeteria, got a paper plate, and I practiced doing the thing on top of the paper plate just to prove that, I could do it and land back on this little spot. And it was pretty easy. I had a pretty good ability at the time to do that. And so that was it. Next day I come back, and they have a section of telephone pole, like probably about 3 feet tall. And it's just loose. It's on the floor. I go, well, I get on top of that, this thing is going to fall over, So Pat Johnson, bless his soul, man, the guy's such a cool guy, he gets down on his knees and he's holding the thing. He's like, okay, try it now while I'm holding this. I'm like, I could probably do it, but if I fall down, I'm going to fall on you, So I do it, do the kick a couple times. Okay, we're good. And then, so that was all summer. We were doing the training. We trained for 6 weeks, and then kind of went away. And they said, "Okay, we're gonna call you back." And when we get to that time, I wasn't there the whole time. I was only called back for the beach scenes, and then the tournament scenes. Well, the beach scenes was in October of 1983. So it's starting to get cold. And we're out there on the beach, and I come out there, and there's those posts sticking out of they had just put them there, like, the day before, of course, and so they're, and they got all the cameras and all the people, and we're going to do the crane kick. So he said, okay, camera's here, sun's setting, so we have only a certain amount of time to do this. Go out there and just keep going, doing the kick over and over until we tell you to stop. And then we're going to need to change lenses and stuff. So walk out on the beach and get up there, boom, just do it over and over and over. The funny thing about it was the telephone pole that they had There were like three of them in a row. And they said, go to the one in the middle. I think it was one over the end. I can't even remember. But the top of it was like it was broken off. It wasn't like a clean cut.
Oh.
Only about half of it was clean. And the second half of it was like, all, you know, like if you took a stick and broke it. So it was very, you couldn't stand on it. But that was the one they wanted me to do. So I really only had half of telephone pole exposed. So I was still able to do it. But it wasn't as easy as if it was just a, you know, flat cut. So do it 15, 20 times. Okay, take a rest. We're going to change lenses. They change the lens on the camera. Get back. Do it 15, 20 times. Okay, good job. That was it. Did the crane technique. Of course, I'm all dressed up, right, in a bodysuit and, you know, bald head. That makes me look like I look now, actually. yeah, that was it. They did the crane kick. And then, okay, you're done. We'll call you back when the tournament scenes. So 3 months later, you know, it was actually December when we came back to, and they had all this tournament stuff set up. And I was totally blown away that they could, you know, basically do a tournament. And they actually had like two other Karate Kid tournaments where they got real tournament promoters to do these tournaments so that the director and everybody could see how it actually goes. And so, and then when in December, when we finally got around to it, they, you know, got the gym, all the spectators, you know, all the judges. And so, you know, for yourself, if you look at the judges that are in the background of the tournament scenes, there's some really famous karate people in the back there. You know, Bob White, Dave Torres, I can't even remember, Dan Ivan, Steve Sander. I mean, these guys were, they were karate regulars. I'd always see them in tournaments and, hey, you're doing this part and you're a judge. Yeah, cool. And so it's a lot of fun to look back and say, see who that guy is? That is, you know, this master of karate. filming went all the way up till December 31st. And it was like that night, it was New Year's Eve and they're buttoning up, and I said, okay, you know, I finished all my parts. Yeah, we'll see you at the premiere, you know. That's how it all went. 40 years ago, Reggie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Time flies. don't remind me how old I am. We are. You know, I mean, I'm a little bit younger than you, but not that much younger. So.
No, I know. Everyone catches up at some point.
But I'm so glad that you mentioned that. In that, I'm gonna have to, I watch Karate Kid many times. I'm gonna have to watch the tournament scene a little bit closer now and check out the who's who that's
there. Oh yeah, check out who's in the red shirts. There's a lot of them, you know, and everybody knows those red shirts though. Mm-hmm. You know, people have remade them.
I like that, and then I also like that that you clarified that you were not the inventor of the kick. But you performed it, and because I'll have to rewatch it. I'm blanking on the name of there was a like a documentary film about the director, and when they were talking about the karate, when he was talking about the Karate Kid. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and he gave you very, very high praise and
yes.
Yeah, I believe he said that you came up with it, but I may be wrong. So, you know.
Well, no, because there is confusion about it because John Albinson, I think after, you know, like 10 or 20 years after I connected with him because I wanted him to sign a script that I had. And I think he felt bad that that I didn't really get credit for the crane kick at the time. Because if you watch at the end, the cast list goes up and it says Daryl Vidal, So for 20 years, I couldn't even prove that that was me. So he made a little video. You can find it on YouTube somewhere. And it's me and John. He says, and this, Daryl, he invented the crane kick. So I said, there you go. But, you know, in my mind, the kick is a double jump kick. So I don't try to claim the double jump kick. But when you start adding all this stuff to it, I did that.
Very nice. Yeah, no, you performed it well, and I like now that you've, you know, mentioned that it wasn't the most optimal conditions to do it in. So now it even is more impressive. So now when I watch it, I'm going to be like, hey, like that was a lot harder than it looked.
Yeah, it is. And the funny thing is now that, you know, I'm as old as I am, and I recently had a hip surgery because I had, you know, just wear and tear over the years. So I probably couldn't do it now. I mean, I could get in the position, but doing the jump and getting and landing it, probably not so. So I can still fake it, I'm sure.
Well, you know, you got it on film, so that's all we need. So
it's a done deal.
Very nice, very nice. So just kind of staying on the Karate Kid a little bit. So as far as, you know, the cast, so I mean, pretty much you and Rob Thomas, I believe, were the only
Ron,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Were the only actual martial artist out of the cast, if I remember correctly.
That's right. Well, obviously Pat Johnson, you know, is one of Chuck Norris's students in Kung Fu Do, but he's the center judge, and then, you know, like you said, Ron Thomas, who played Bobby Brown, was a black belt, and still is in jiu-jitsu, and we still, you know, connect every now and then. He lives kind of close to me, so we'll play golf and stuff, but yeah, nobody else. Chad McQueen had a lot of experience because his dad, you know, Steve McQueen and Pat Johnson were best friends. And so Chad would go and train, but he didn't have a black belt, you know. So that's why if you watch that, you can say, oh, he's pretty good, you know. And he did, you know, he didn't know how to do the karate, but he didn't hold a black belt at the time. And then, like, Billy Zabka, I think he had wrestled at the time, but he, you know, very athletic, so he took right to it, was able to do.
Yeah, that's something that you actually just, I was going to bring up earlier, but you just reminded me now. That's really a testament to how well they, you know, they got everything together for the movie, because, you know, being a martial artist, you watch movies, especially non-martial arts movies where they have a fight scene or something, and it's like, okay, like that guy didn't really train or that girl didn't really train. But with the Karate Kid, I mean, you know, there were obviously people that were better, but I think for the most part, it's like, I didn't really realize that a lot of people, you know, most of the cast had not trained. So
I mean, they did have 6 weeks. I mean, they're, you know, you can learn your front kicks and your round kicks and, you know, your jab punch pretty effectively. So
that's the thing, is like you can learn it, but to be camera ready, you know, I've been doing martial arts, you know, since the 90s, and I think if I was on camera, I don't think I would. I don't think I would look like I knew what I was doing. Even though
I would. I think that you would, because one, you know, the camera can help a lot. If the director knows what he's doing, he, you know, knows how to block, how to get the right shots, get the right angles, and you can look a lot better. Because when they were doing the movie and we were doing the tournament, and I was watching them film that, and we were just shaking our heads thinking, this is not going to work, it's going to look terrible, you know. And then when it comes out, it's like, okay, it looks pretty good, you know.
So you know, when they're doing the training, you know, I assume that you had to be part of the training they were doing, where you're kind of like, oh, like, I know all this, like, hang out at a...
I did feel like part of the group, because even though I wasn't one of the Cobra Kai's, we were all training together, and they let me, you know, do some of the training, teach, you know, do some of it since I was the black belt. And so Pat would say, okay, go ahead and run, you know, some front kicks over there. So I would actually, you know, I wouldn't say teach them, but, you know, lead the workout. So 6 weeks, you know, then you can, you know, a bunch of teenagers, they could learn some basics, pull it off.
Did you get to have any input on, you're like, oh, well, like, this fight should go this way, or,
you know, the plot, in terms of, you know, who went up and down in the tournament standings, but pretty much Pat let me choreograph all my scenes, because he said, okay, now we want to, you know, and so I could say, hey, when we have this shot, he's going to come in, I'm going to do this move, and they, okay, we like that. That was, you know, the drop spin kick. And then, okay, when he comes in, I'm going to do this back spin. And, you know, so those are some of the favorite scenes out of that movie. You know, when I back spin the fat guy, you know, the people really like that kick, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's, you know, jump spin back. So he let me pretty much showcase all the things that I wanted to do. And then when in the fight where I fight Johnny, we did it together, but I kind of, you know, said, let's do this, then let's do this, and then let's do this. And they said, looks good. And so, you know, we basically had a full tournament fight scene, all choreographed. So everything pretty much was laid out for us. They just filmed it. We did it like, I don't know, 5-10 times. And then they just cut it and edited it to what you see today.
Mm-hmm. Anything that you shot that didn't make it into the movie that you were like, oh, I wish I would have put that in there?
Well, yeah, there is, because when we choreographed the fight of me and Johnny, I score a point. So it goes, he scores a point, I score a point, he scores a point, and then he scores another point, and I lose, you know, but at least I scored a point. And then when in the movie, it's like, what happened to my point? I don't even score one point. He beats me 3-0. And I actually talked to John about that. I go, what happened to my point? Yeah, we needed to make the movie shorter. Like,
yeah, that's the thing about you know, Hollywood. Television. I've actually been on local news. When I was living in Reno, I got to be on the local news a couple of times. I was working for an IT company, and they were wanting to interview, you know, tech experts about the new version of Windows that was coming out at the time. And in both situations, you know, they interviewed me for, I don't know, a good 30, 45 minutes. And, you know, I was like excited, like, oh, I'm going to be on the TV. And both times it was like a 60 seconds worth of footage that they used. And
yeah.
It's like, man, this is messed up. They talked to me a long time. Why? And they're only using a minute, if that. So.
Yeah,
TV and movies. You don't get to see as much as you think you would. So,
yep.
I can relate to that. So, one more thing with karate. I mean, I could talk Karate Kid all day long, but you know, we've got a lot of other things to get to. But I did want to ask. So, with the Karate Kid and you know, it blew up the way that it did. Did you have any aspirations for staying in the movie biz, or?
Well, you know what? Of course I did, because, you know, as I was coming up the ranks, I knew I was good at karate, so I definitely thought that I could be the next Bruce Lee, you know, become a movie star, and obviously getting into the Karate Kid could have launched that. But after the Karate Kid, it didn't catch my ire. It was like, this is tough. This is hard work. You know, a lot of the people that I met, like, on the sidelines and got to hang out with were, it kind of lost its glamour. So I did get an audition, but I never got an agent. And so nobody was really trying to put me out there. So I did get an audition. It didn't pan out. Then I was, you know, got a job. We had a full-time job and planning on finishing school. And, you know, that was kind of it. I didn't really pursue it at the time. Went back to, you know, a regular lifestyle. Started teaching karate, working full-time, getting married. You know, life happened. But, it, you know, to answer the question, I didn't pursue it with a lot of zeal because it kind of lost all its attractiveness after I had done the movie. Looking back, I wish I had made a bigger effort, but I don't have any regrets. I mean, I love the way my life turned out. You know, I have great family, great kids, great grandkids, a lot of students over, 35 years of teaching here in Marietta. So I have a lot to be thankful for. Like I said, no regrets. But yeah, it would be nice to be a millionaire, you know, a movie star. But I've got my piece of the action.
Well, I mean, you know, with a one and done, that the Karate Kid is the one and done to have. If you're going to have
it doesn't get. There's so many other little movies there that people come out in and the movie disappears. And for some reason, and I still can't put my finger on it except for maybe that, you know, it's a John Avildsen underdog movie. It's not a martial arts movie, really. It's really a story about, you know, a kid and who didn't have a dad. And a lot of people connected with that movie. And, you know, for the first, 10 years, it would only come on once a year, you know. So it's, the Karate Kid's on again. Watch it. Or maybe you had it on tape, so people would watch it on tape. And then it wasn't until, like, 20 years later that it started to really pick up steam. And it would show multiple times. And they would have a Karate Kid marathon and show all three of them. And, so it kind of got steam, and then after 30 years, it was like canon. You know, people were like, "Oh, the Karate Kid, you know, 30 year anniversary." So I started getting invited to all these events, living 30 years in, you know, anonymity with one little thing, and then all of a sudden it blew up, and then, you know, with Cobra Kai and everything.
I mean, the movie itself really connected with so many people, and there's so many people that got into the martial arts because of the movie, and that's huge. And then, you know, now with this Cobra Kai and the resurgence of it, you know, it's just reaching more people. I know that you've gotten some mentions on Cobra Kai, but did they ask you to, or have they asked you to pop up on any of the episodes here?
You said, I've been mentioned. I've actually been shown, because they used a cut from the original movie in episode one. The rest, I can't say anything.
Okay.
There is one more part of season six left, right?
Okay. All right. I like this. This is turning into
spoilers.
This is turning into a really great day. So I've told some others that today is the Karate Kid day for me. So as far as recording, so having you on, and then later on today I'm going to be recording with a gentleman that was background person on the latest season of Cobra Kai. So getting to talk to his name is Chris. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm messing up my thought process of his name here. Chris Robertson, I believe. Chris Roberts. Christy Roberts is the gentleman that I'm going to be speaking with. And my understanding, if I remember correctly, he is like the one of the judges for the French team, one of the coaches for the French team. So, so yeah, I'm excited to get some more Karate Kid universe info and stories. So yeah, this is exciting. Now I'm gonna, in addition to rewatching Karate Kid today, I guess I'm gonna have to go back through Cobra Kai again. I actually just got through, you know, the whole series that's out so far. So time to go back and rewatch it again. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Part 3 comes out February 13th.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. So, we're definitely going to get onto your book here, but so I have to mention one. Do you have any excitement for the Karate Kid movie that's coming up with the Daniel Karate and Kid Jackie Legends. Chan and yeah, Legends. Yeah. That's it. Is there?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really. You know, I don't want to poo-poo anything, but, you know, the Karate Kid 2010, a lot of people felt like that should have been called the Kung Fu Kid, right?
Jackie yeah, Chan, exactly.
Kung Fu, China, all that kind of stuff. I always kind of felt like, okay, whatever. You know, it doesn't take away from the Karate Kid, you know, still a great story. But whether it's really part of the universe, anything that comes out is only going to add to, you know, the universe. So, you know, a Broadway show, the Legends show, you know, have at it, man.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how they're going to connect it, you know, connect the worlds and the story.
So am I.
I think it'll be fun. So, you're not in it now, are you?
No.
Okay.
I can tell you that for sure.
Right on. Okay, well, we'll definitely have to get on to more of that at another time. But we've got to talk about your book. I'm great. Excited to see what this. See what it's all about. I got a little glimpse into what it is, but let's talk the book.
Great, thanks, Reggie. And you had mentioned that you're an IT guy.
Yes.
So I am too. I 30 plus years in technology, and mostly with schools, and that's really the basis of the book, which is called Mindcraft, not Mind. But Mindcraft, and going back all the way, I've always been a tech person. Looking back to Terminator with Skynet, and sentient computers, and the idea of AI taking over has always been something that I've loved. So I after watching, there's so many things out there. Especially now, it was timely for me to put together a book that involves technology and esports and gaming, which I'm not really a gamer, but I know about the world of it because I'm on the periphery of it with schools and stuff. And so came up with a plot line, and so... The concept is Mindcraft is a arcade style game that has taken over the world, and basically everybody plays it. Maybe 4 or 5 years in the future, it's expanded so everybody plays it. It can translate on the fly, so there's no barriers. There's no language barriers. You know, I can play against you. I can play against these people in China. We'll all be playing together. And so the concept is, you know, there's all these teams, Minecraft universe, MCU, is this global competition that comes out kind of like the Olympics of esports. And we follow a team called the Digital Mavericks, and they compete in this. But as they get deeper into the competition, there's also, okay, so you have Minecraft, which is the game. There's also, they're all in school too, and there's this, also this educational system which runs all the curriculum, and it's called EduNex, and it becomes its own global phenomenon. Basically, it's so successful, or every student is on EduNex, which, you know, could happen. But then, while they're amidst all the flurry of the competitions, EduNex buys Minecraft, and it's like, oh, what's happening here? Is this AI going to take over the world? And, well, it starts to seem that there's a nefarious agenda behind, you know, EduNex and Minecraft, and so that's what the book is about. It's kind of a roller coaster ride, going through competitions, but at the same time, you know, there's this underlying agenda that they're trying to investigate and discover, and part of the storyline is that even though AI is in kind of like in the cloud, if you will, or in the compute systems, it can also affect real life, right? So the things that happen to the Digital Mavericks as they compete and they start to ask the question, is it rigged? Is somebody behind this? What is controlling it, and why are our lives being affected? What caused this accident, and why did this happen, and why did that happen in real life? So that's what is going on as they work towards this competition. And so that's what the book is about. And you know, like I said, it comes out December 10th, and I'm really excited about it. I'm trying to actually shop it to, because I think it could be a great movie. Everybody who's read it can see it, like, you know, the next Hunger Games type of movie, or Ready Player One, if you've seen that movie. And I definitely think it could be something like that. So try to get the word out, see if I can find a scriptwriter, you know, show it to people who I know in the business. And maybe somebody who's listening to Reggie will pick up it and want to write the script for it.
I'm excited. I'm excited to read it. I have pre-ordered it. So,
oh, thank you.
I'm looking forward to reading it. It sounds like it's going to be a good ride, and definitely relevant. I've been talking with my wife lately about just it's crazy how AI is really affecting our lives and
every day.
Kind of ways that we're not even realizing it.
Absolutely. More than you know. You know, people like us understand, you know, where it's impacting our lives or how, but you know, you really don't know how, if there's an agenda. You know, who's driving the thing, right? You know. Appreciate you allowing me to plug my.
I'm excited to read it, and it would definitely, I agree with you, would definitely make a great movie or a mini series or, you know, something like that. So the
title of the book is called Minecraft, the Educational Singularity. If you just do a search with my name, Daryl Vidal, and Minecraft, you can get it at, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all wherever books are sold. It's already available on pre-order, like you say. December 10th, the hardback and the Kindle version will be available. And then I think in January we're going to have the paperback.
Very nice. And, we'll put links to that in the...
Oh, thank you.
in the show notes and stuff, and I'll make sure to promote it to everybody that I talk to. So yeah, I'm excited for that. So
great.
All right, so we're gonna move to our lightning round here as we get close in on our time here today. So just a kind of few little fun little questions to close things out with. First thing being, do you have a favorite technique?
You mean for like sparring?
Well, so since this is, you know, typically, you know, geared towards your normal, you know, Kenpo folk, usually what I mean by technique is, you know, you have your, you know, your five swords, your thunder hammers, that sort of thing. But we can open it up to anything. So, you know, if there's a particular kick you like or something like that.
Good question, because even though we're Kenpo, we're not Ed Parker, and so we don't have, you know, five swords and tail dragon or whatever. We have all our techniques are, you know, they're in groups of 10, and there's, you know, set one, set two, you know, number one, number two, so they don't really have titles and stuff. But to think about what my favorite one is.
And it doesn't have to be just one if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole, that's fine. there's a whole group of them, but, you know, I like. Okay, so I told you I do some Filipino stick fighting too. So there's not a lot of overlap, but there is some with, you know, arm locks and wrist locks and stuff and disarms. And so a lot of the manipulation, arm manipulation stuff are very enjoyable to me because it kind of cross over in both areas. I can use it in Kenpo, I can use it in stick fighting. Use it as a self-defense move. So yeah, you know, inside grips, outside grips, arm manipulations. That's what I like.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. All right. Next one. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I mean, all the forms are very special to me, you know, for different reasons. You know, this is the fundamental one. This is the one that starts to incorporate soft, you know, techniques. So I can't say that I have one. I have been modifying some of our kata to include the bow staff. So that's something that I'm working on right now for my school. So yeah, adding the bow staff to some of our katas is
very nice and perfect. That leads into the next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
In terms of Kenpo, definitely bow staff. I mean, not because it's I'm great with it. I mean, I can't do all the spinning and twirling. I mean, to me, it's really a very practical, fundamental weapon. You know, an extension of your body, extension of Filipino stick fighting. So I love it, but I just pretty much stick to the fundamentals. You know, and then some of the thing. I don't spin it. I don't throw it over my head and all that kind of stuff. I don't like where it turns into, you know, a circus act or acrobatics or things that really have no application. You know, I watch some of these guys and they're going 100 miles an hour, but it's an aluminum staff. So if you hit somebody with it, it would break. You know, yeah. I like nunchucks that are real nunchucks, and if you make a mistake, it smashes you in the face. Or really see how good you are.
Yeah, no, I agree. I recently picked up a staff to get back to working on staff set, and I was looking at the store and looking at the different staffs, and it's like, yeah, they had, you know, tons of these you know, extreme martial art, you know, all these crazy colors and all this stuff like that. I'm like, no, I just want a traditional, just hardwood. Regular staff, and it's like they had like one regular staff and all these other crazy ones, and I'm like, give me the traditional one, and you can keep all that other stuff. And so I've got my staff, and I've been working on staff set and in my living room, and so far my dogs, myself, and my furniture have not have not taken any serious damage. So, but the day is still young, so we'll see.
Right.
See how that
still
goes. But yeah, when you get that staff set going, definitely have to check that out and see what you have going there.
All right. Cool.
So then the last question here. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Okay, well, I have a
besides
for you.
Ed Parker, since, you know, we're Kenpo folks, besides Ed Parker.
Okay. You know, I did meet Ed Parker because at the in the late 90s, you know, he passed in, what, 96 or something.
90.
My instructor was very involved with the international, so we would go and do his, judge's training. Met him a couple times there. But to answer your question, obviously Bruce Lee, he's the one who drew me into all this, and would love to have known him or trained with him. In terms of alive, Danny Inosanto, even though he's out here, he's near me, he travels all over the world, and I've never met him. So and it would be pretty simple for me to sign up for a seminar or look him up and go to his place, but it just has never happened. And but it will at some point, hopefully before he gets too old and passes away. So those are really
very nice. I like it. All right. Well, now we are at the time for shameless self promotion. So you can plug anything you like or say anything that you like. Anything
Again, I thank you, Reggie. Great show. Love talking with you. And plugging my book. For fans, if you want to, I can be reached pretty available on Facebook. My Facebook account that I have for martial arts is Vidal Kempo. So Vidal Kempo on Facebook, on Instagram. I have a silly handle. It's called Rock Breaker Boy.
But I like it.
The reason at the time I didn't realize how it was going to mark me. But I know I can change it, but it's already out there. So Rockbreaker Boy on Instagram. You can message me on either of those platforms, and I'll usually respond as long as you're not trying to sell me something. And I like to interact with the fans and, you know, talk to people. And, I actually have a merch site, so if you either go to either one of those platforms, you go to my bio, my link tree is there, so I have a site with all merchandise where you can get, my logo on a T-shirts or hoodies or on a coffee cup. And then I will be having autographed photos and my book available on that merch site. And you can buy it, get it autographed, and I'll ship it to you. All
right. Excellent. Yeah, I will put links to that on my page and in the show notes and stuff. So, yeah, definitely boys and girls, get out there, get some nice Christmas gifts. If that's your thing, or if it's not Christmas, just get a gift just because you need to. So, but I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and hearing your story, and we could definitely talk Karate Kid and Kenpo and FMA stuff all the long right. day. So we'll definitely have to do a part two and three and four and five as we go along. I just thank you so much, and I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. And just thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.